Good evening and thanks for joining us on The Week in Review. I'm Amanda Vinicky. Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson answers the call of Congress and takes the hot seat, telling a Republican-led committee the city is safer because it's a sanctuary for immigrants.
Chicago's welcoming city ordinance and our other laws and policies do not lead to more crime. They do not prevent cooperation with federal law enforcement on criminal matters. And we do not harbor criminals. We arrest them.
As a former mayor teases a comeback.
I'm not done with public service, and I'm hoping public service is not done with me.
Meanwhile, President Donald Trump says to bear with me as higher tariffs on some goods take effect while delaying others.
Our new trade policy will also be great for the American farmer. I love the farmer. Yes. Who will now be selling into our home market, the USA, because nobody is going to be able to compete with you.
A sudden guilty plea from the man who murdered seven people at Highland Park's 4th of July parade. Walgreens' longtime prescription for success ends in a private equity buyout, and Illinois seems to wave surrender in its hunt for a new state flag.
And now to our Week in Review panel. Joining us are John Pletz from Crain's Chicago Business, Carrie Shepard from Axios Chicago, Mariah Wolfel of WBEZ, and Madison Zavedra of Block Club Chicago. And we'll get to it. Mariah, I'm going to start with you because you, as well as Mayor Johnson, traveled to Washington, D.C. this week. You both sat through 6 hours of testimony. So give us the main takeaway for people who, you know, were working and didn't have 6 hours to watch.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we learned anything new. I think Republicans stuck to their talking points that the sanctuary city status has impeded federal law enforcement of immigration law, and sanctuary cities' mayors were unchanged in their commitment to being sanctuary cities, which in Chicago prevents Chicago police from doing things, for instance, like asking for a person's immigration status when they, you know, interact with police, or honoring ICE detainers, which are requests that go to Chicago police or local police departments from ICE, saying basically, we think that the person that you have arrested may be undocumented based on our set of databases, and can you hold them for an extra 48 hours so we can send an ICE agent to the department and arrest them? And that is a warrantless request, you know. Oftentimes, it's not attached to a criminal warrant. It is plainly a request from federal immigration enforcement for Chicago police to hold people past their release date. And, you know, we've reported that that has been pretty costly to local governments.
Literally dollars and cents.
Yeah, well, and literally through civil lawsuits. New York City just had to pay over $90 million last year, found liable for over $90 million for honoring ICE detainers during the time, in the early aughts, I think like 2009 to 2012.
Basically for holding people beyond when they otherwise should be able to legally.
Right, without a warrant. So I think the mayors that testified repeatedly said, when there's a criminal warrant, we do cooperate with federal immigration enforcement. And in fact, Chicago police is often in contact with federal immigration authorities when they're carrying out deportation, actions in the city. You know, Superintendent Larry Snelling said as much, that they make, you know, they actually make deployment decisions based on where ICE will be in neighborhoods. So they know when ICE and where ICE is operating in Chicago. But, you know, they do not willingly enforce immigration laws.
And so I actually want to that end, let's hear from some of that committee, because Republicans really did try to snare Mayor Johnson as well as the three other mayors that were testifying. Here's questioning from the committee's chair, Kentucky Congressman James Comer.
Will you turn that criminal over to ICE?
And we do not harbor criminals. Our local police department works hard every single day to ensure that the city of Chicago is
yes
safe.
Or no, will you turn the criminal over to ICE?
With a criminal warrant from the federal government, our local law enforcement repeatedly collaborates with federal agents.
So, Carrie, is it naive to think that the Republican members of Congress were earnestly trying to understand what it means to be a sanctuary city, or was this all political theater?
A political theater, absolutely. I wouldn't say go so far as to say naive. I think hopefully we always want somebody to go in there and learn something, but this was absolutely political theater. That clip you just played of the mayor, he did, you know, let's be honest, everybody was kind of ranking how he did, and he did fairly well. He was a little bit robotic, and you saw that in that answer. That was his head of his law department sitting right behind him. You saw that as well. So he was sticking to the message. But yeah, I think that all four mayors, you know, he did have some friendly faces on the panel. Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy made a point to say, you know, Chicago for the 8 years in a row has been voted the best city in America. And, you know,
everything that's dope about America.
Everything
comes from Chicago.
Sherman. No, yes, absolutely. But I mean, they did take, and then of course, Republicans on the panel took pot shots at the mayor for his low approval ratings. And that seemed a little less than necessary and off topic.
So the Sun-Times called it a draw. Does anybody disagree with that assessment of the mayor's performance? And speak up if so. If not, Mariah, I'm going to go to you because it's to your point. Nancy Mace, the congresswoman, said that you suck, was her words, at answering questions. That's her words,
no
not
decorum.
Mine.
No decorum.
And was this the sort of grilling that you in the press corps regularly give the mayor? How does this compare to how he answers questions there versus at press conferences?
I talked about this. When he first started repeating his talking points, which, you know, we all knew he was going to do based on the stories we did about his preparation, he said he's going to avoid taking the bait on personal attacks, which he largely did. And that means just sticking to the talking points. But he was pretty robotic. And when he started on that line, I did kind of roll my eyes. I'm like, all right, well, you know, we're going to here's what it's going to be. He's going to repeat his talking points as he does and gets criticized for in Chicago. But I do think that in this setting, in the face of a lot of aggression, in the face of a lot of mischaracterizations of crime in Chicago and how sanctuary city status works, I do think it was more effective. It was kind of like almost like a, you know, screw you to the Congress people, because I'm just going to keep saying the same thing over and over again, and you can attack me based on polls, on my approval rating, or bring up, you know, controversial stories back home, like the gift room that came up, but I'm going to stick to my points. He was a little less loose than I'd say, like, Boston Mayor Michelle Wu or Mike Johnston from Denver, but I do think that, like, sticking to that was smart and effective in this setting.
John, so perhaps that was a safe strategy. We know that he met with, thanks to your reporting, I believe, some pastors to literally pray before this undoubtedly stressful situation for him. But things are going to get a whole lot more stressful if federal funding doesn't come to Chicago, because it is a sanctuary city. We're already seeing now the Small Business Association saying it's not going to have an office in Chicago any longer because of that. What could the financial repercussions be, and were there any because of this testimony?
I don't think his testimony creates any repercussions, but I think there are repercussions of Illinois being a blue state, of Chicago, you know, being a very Democratic city. And we saw that to some extent, you know, the first time around when Trump was in office. So I don't think that changes.
And how do you believe that the mayor performed? And he's talked about it. How does he feel?
Well, I think I would agree with everything that we've said, that he maybe wasn't the star of the panel, but he held his own. He didn't rise to the bait. He didn't lose control. You know, he didn't give anybody the opportunity for kind of a viral gotcha moment, which I'm sure some Republicans were very eager to have gotten their hands on. I think he, stuck to the talking points of trying to highlight some of the good things about Chicago, that, like, you know, homicides down, stuff like that.
Does this do anything to, as Congresswoman Mace mentioned, those really low poll numbers? And what do you make of those, Madison?
Hard to say. I think that the mayor doing relatively well probably gives the city a little bit of pride, you know, regardless of, like, you know, your super strong feelings about the mayor. It's got to feel good to know that he went to Congress and he, you know, didn't fall down on the job. He did his best to represent the city. You know, I think the next, 2 years of his term, I'll be curious to see where the approval ratings go. They can seemingly only go up from there.
So. Not changing anything with his relationship with the city council or anything, Mariah.
You know, one of his big critics, Alderman Andre Vasquez, funny enough, progressive who has become more and more of a critical voice against Johnson tweeted, you know, got to give credit where credit's due. He did a good job in Chicago. Lori Lightfoot, former mayor, indirectly complimented Johnson. Kudos to all the mayors who stood their ground in the face of far-right Republican questioning. And so, you know, but there are plenty of local issues and local fights that are contributing to Johnson's, you know, whatever you want to call it, contentious relationship with the council, that I don't think that necessarily changes, but maybe it leads to a phone call between, you know, two, you know, opponents that helps build some sort of bridge. But I don't think it's making a huge dent in his approval ratings. I think the fact that he didn't screw up maybe prevented things from getting worse for him, I'd say.
There we go. Now, John, what about some more uncertainty that is facing really all of America and businesses? And this, of course, is with tariffs. There's been some whiplash where they were instituted higher tariffs, Mexico, Canada, and China, and then some goods rescinded from that. What is going on here, and what Illinois industries are most impacted?
Well, nobody really knows what's going on because it, you know, it changes day to day and sometimes hour to hour, and that's a big part of the problem. It affects pretty much everybody, you know, from ag to steel to everything in between, small businesses, large global corporations. So they're all feeling it, and they're all trying to figure it out. They're all trying to plan for it, and because they don't know, and they haven't really had a lot of warning, it just creates a lot of uncertainty. And as we saw this week, markets hate uncertainty. Companies don't like the uncertainty. You know, it feels like for this administration that tariffs are something of a Swiss Army knife. You know, whether it's Mexico and Canada, China, and now Russia. So that seems to be, you know, that seems to be a problem. And I think there are a lot of people, or at least a lot of industries, who would like them to put that Swiss Army knife back in their pocket, or at least use it a lot more carefully. I mean, the Wall Street Journal...
It is a knife, after all.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, the Wall Street Journal, of all places, took the administration to the woodshed twice in one week on this topic.
And not particularly common for the Wall Street Journal. I'm curious, are there any Illinois industries or businesses that will be, when we say impacted, I think my impulse is to think negatively so. Are there anybody that are advantaged by this?
Sure. The steel industry, you know, that's going to help them. Prices have been very, very low. So that's going to help them. Anyone who doesn't have a distributed global supply chain is all of a sudden at a huge advantage. If those tariffs do come through, you've got a big price advantage against your competitors. But it's not just the tariffs we've been seeing or hearing about this week. You know, they've been delayed, put off again, which puts us off till early April. That's when you have another potentially even bigger tariff issue that's going to come to us, which is, you know, a review of our trade balance with all of those countries. And then you're going to see potential tariffs on all of those countries. So if you talk to, you know, global companies, they're worried about that just as much as the tariffs we've heard about already.
Global companies,
so this isn't,
of course,
over.
An impact here in Illinois. Now, Carrie, the future of Medicaid, also uncertain. You have been reporting
absolutely
on this, in this plan to cut $880 billion. What impact does that have on Illinois?
Huge. I mean, there's as Governor Pritzker has been beating this drum for a while, he's been doing press conferences with fellow Democrats. You know, that's a quarter of the Illinois population, something like 3.4 million people are covered by Medicaid. That's their insurance. That's how they're getting health care. And the Republicans voted for this budget resolution that, you know, we need to cut $880 million. And there's only really one place you can go with that. That's Medicaid or possibly Medicare. Nobody's going to touch Medicare. Now, to be clear, the Senate has said we are not going to vote for this. And also, Medicaid is not one of those strictly blue and red issues. There are plenty of Republicans and people from Trump-supporting districts who are saying you cannot cut Medicaid. You have rural districts that depend on it. You cannot cut this. This is going to really annihilate my constituents. You know, I've been speaking with nonprofits, leaders of nonprofits, Thresholds, these, you know, places like this that serve 10,000 people in Chicago, and half their budget is from Medicaid. there is no contingency plan, right? Like, this is something that is counted on, they depend on. We were talking about this before we started. So there isn't like a, oh, if I lose Medicaid, I cut this program. It means I can't serve the people I serve.
And, John, is this something, we look at tariffs, we look at Medicaid, that the impact is across the board, or either with Medicaid or tariffs, is Illinois an outlier in any way?
No, we happen to be a very large state, and we're going to feel it. I don't think we feel it a lot more than others. The one thing is, you know, Governor Pritzker has said, we don't have the excess capital to just write that check and cover it.
Now, I want to turn over to you, Madison. This is a story that was really heartbreaking, of course, back when seven people lost their lives in Highland Park. Surprise that the had been the alleged shooter did admit his guilt here. Does this provide closure to the community of Highland Park?
I don't know if I would go so far as to say closure. I don't know what could ever give the community full closure, but I do think that this will save the community, the families, a really possibly long drawn out trial process. I mean, trials can go on for weeks and can be re-traumatizing, making people relive some of the worst hours, days of their lives. So I imagine that it's nice to have this chapter over. The sentencing is really the only thing, from my understanding, that's left, or if there's any kind of controversy over the whole signing. You know, he said.
Yes, explain that. Instead of signing Robert Cremo III, he signed?
He signed Donald Trump. And my understanding from reading reporting on this from legal experts is that it shouldn't change anything. It shouldn't make his plea invalid or anything, but it was weird. I mean, when I read that, it definitely gave me pause. Like, is that going to do anything? But my understanding is that it was just a stunt move.
We don't know why.
Yeah,
he represented himself. A lot of questions.
It's still in the record that he pleaded guilty.
Yeah.
I mean, those are official court records, so it probably
shouldn't.
He said it,
yes, in front of a judge.
Right.
The judge accepted
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. And some of the witnesses are going to be able to give witness statements at the sentencing in April.
So there's an opportunity still.
There's an opportunity, yeah.
John, I'm going to go back to you because you have been writing about DEI, three letters that got a lot of play actually some years back, and we saw businesses trumpeting that they were enforcing and trying to really take initiative when it comes to diversity, equity, inclusion. Some Illinois companies drawing back on that now. How so?
Well, they're not talking about diversity or DEI or even ESG in many cases in their annual reports. And it's something you're seeing not only with Chicago companies, you're seeing with other companies. Part of it is...
What Chicago companies, though?
It was United, Motorola, CDW, ADM.
You know, McDonald's a couple months ago, yeah.
Yeah, so you've seen a lot of companies in their annual reports trying to drop the word diversity or DEI or even ESG in some cases. And mainly it's become a flashpoint. It's not only become an issue for, social media campaigns, it's also become a potential liability for them because of what the Trump administration had said about DEI programs.
And how so? Because we talked about, from a government point of view, the executive order, but you're saying that this is not just to governments or universities, it's also to public companies?
Well, it's to companies who do business with the federal government, but they also, there was part of that executive order said, directed federal agencies to come up with a list of large companies and private institutions to conduct investigations into to see if their DEI programs violate current policy. So that puts it in a whole different category. It's one thing to be trying to read the political tea leaves and saying, we feel this is maybe out of favor with some of our customers, some of our investors. It's another when you fear legal liability.
Legal liability. So much court action with this Trump administration. Now, we started out the conversation talking about current mayor Brandon Johnson, but also we have this former mayor, Rahm Emanuel, who is not saying no to a return Mariah, what do you expect is on the horizon for former Mayor Rahm Emanuel?
You know, there are multiple offices he could pursue. I mean, it's unclear what one he has his eyes set on. There is the mayor's office. There is the governor's office. There is potentially State Senator Dick Durbin's seat if he, you know, retires in the near future. There's the presidency. And we just have no idea.
It we're going lofty.
Yeah, 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 we're going high.
You know, Emanuel hasn't been shy in recent weeks about criticizing what he sees as the Democrats' issue. He's making the case that Democrats have become too progressive and focused on cultural issues. I mean,
you know, to that end, actually, let's hear that.
Sure.
He has said that Democrats need to focus on the classroom and not on the bathroom.
Now, I'm going to say this right now. We're having a debate about pronouns, right? Well, what if you have two-thirds of your kids that don't know what a pronoun is? Okay, and nobody is raising their voices. You just had the worst reading scores in 30 years, worst math scores in 30 years. And we're talking about bathrooms.
How's that message sitting?
This was just such a bizarre line for him, I felt. Because, one, when he first spoke about this on Bill Maher's show last week, he was asked, why does Mayor Johnson have such a low approval rating? And this is what he veered towards. I mean, Johnson does not take up transgender issues, or really LGBTQ issues are not a focal point of his administration.
So is that saying that he's looking toward a more national audience than Carrie?
It does make me.
I mean, that's where you think about, you know, Durbin's seat, you know, Senator Durbin's seat or the governor's seat, you know, because they're, let's be honest, Chicago's blue, but the rest of Illinois is not blue. And that would be him maybe tipping his hat a little bit to the more conservative voters in the state.
You know, we do have to say that, you know, Chicago Tribune reporter Greg Pratt surfaced an old, you know, ordinance that was introduced by Emanuel himself in 2016 that would prohibit companies in Chicago from making people prove their gender when they want to use same-gender bathrooms. And so I do just need to point that out when we talk about, you know, these new lines of attack.
Got it. And Madison, let's turn to you because the state flag. Illinoisans had an opportunity to say if they wanted it to be changed or not. And we had a lot of options. Thousands, I think, were submitted, or at least hundreds.
Mm-hmm. Thousands.
Thousands. All right.
Yeah.
So they narrowed it down to 10 finalists, and Illinois voters could pick from those 10. And yeah, lo and behold, the most votes were garnered by the current state flag, which I saw a nickname for, SOB, seal on a bedsheet. You know,
it stands for other things too.
Yeah, right? It does. So it's not anything binding like this election, so to speak. But it's supposed to inform a report that could determine, you know, something about the state flag.
Vexillologists, which is our flag experts,
as
you noted, dislike the current flag. Was this all? I don't know, Carrie. Does this show that maybe not everything should go to a popular vote?
I mean, perhaps. I have to say, you know, you were talking about Medicaid. We're talking about tariffs. I covered this new flag, and I got so much response.
People
from
care.
This. People really, really care about the flag. And some people told me, some readers of Axios said, look, I mean, this is such a waste of time and money. To be clear, I did ask Secretary of State Alexei Giannoulias' office how much money the Secretary of State's office spent on this. They told me none. So there you go, because the Flag Commission is under the Secretary's office. But, you know, some people, I responded to someone, maybe they want to do something more democratic. Maybe the state needs an update. If you ever look at other states' flags, we are not doing great, I have to say. There are some really nice flags out there. And so, I mean, yes, should everything go to a popular vote? We've got bigger issues, I would say it was a fun thing.
It was something interesting to report on, even if we landed at the back. And with that, I'm going to have to wave off any further conversation because we are out of time. Our thanks to John Pletz, Carrie Shepard, Mariah Wolfel, and Madison Zavedra. We will be back to wrap things up with a tribute to one of our beloved coworkers, right after this.
Tonight's presentation of Chicago Tonight, Week in Review, is made possible in part by Ann and Rich Carr, BNSF Railway, Francine and Dr. Anthony Brown, and the Mullenhauer Progressive Philanthropic Fund, in honor of Ida Mullenhauer, supporting quality journalism.
Chicago Tonight is made possible in part by the Alexandra and John Nichols family, the Polk Brothers Foundation. Additional support is provided by
And that is our show for this Friday night. Don't forget, you can get Chicago Tonight and The Week in Review streamed on Facebook, YouTube, and our website. Now, before we go, it is a bittersweet day here on Week in Review. The man who has been the heart and soul of WTTW since the mid-1980s is retiring. There he is, Al Williams. He has been production manager, field camera operator, editor, video shader, technical director, robocam operator. So much more, candy giver. Nobody would argue if you called Al the funniest, kindest, and most generous member of the WTTW family. He's getting out to enjoy life with his wife, Subi, and his three daughters and countless friends. Once you meet Al, you are a friend. So, my friend Al, as you ride off into the sunset on your fabulous bike, know how much your colleagues here appreciate you and are going to miss you. Now, for the Week in Review, I'm Amanda Vinicky. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and safe, and have a good night. All right, and I need to talk about, I'm an avid Walgreens shopper. It is now being purchased by private equity. This is bad news for Chicago, John.
Yeah, it's one of Chicago's biggest companies, one of its oldest public companies, and one of its largest employers. So, you know, private equity doesn't come in when things are going well.
Right. What do you think they're going to do to it?
I think they're going to sell off some pieces. I think they're probably going to cut some jobs. And I think they're going to try and do what previous ownership couldn't do for the last 12 years, which is make them competitive. They got a tall order.
Good question. Good news for CVS. I was thinking bad news for maybe Pharmacy Deserts, but perhaps CVS comes and sweeps
in.
I think it is bad
for Pharmacy Deserts. I mean, Walgreens was already going to close thousands. They were already on
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to be a multilingual law firm that provides translators for a variety of languages.